This is a continuation of the Leo T. Crispin tapes in connection with the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary Library, and this is on the 24th of October 1978. When Dr. McCall became president, did you report to him, or did you still report to a faculty committee?
I don't have that material before me at the present time and haven't reviewed it. As I recollect, since I'd been reporting to Dr. Dobbins, when McCall came as president, I was reporting directly to Dr. McCall. There was a library committee, but that committee was only advisory at that time.
And that continued until your retirement?
No, no. Now, when the structure was reorganized in seminary, and I have difficulty here, I'm not sure whether it was with the organization of the seminary into the three schools or just when it was, I began to report to Dr. Peterson, but I think maybe that was later. I believe that that in the 1957-58, during the period of controversy, that I was still reporting to Dr. McCall directly in regard to library matters.
Now, the seminary organized into three schools you mentioned, that was in 1953,
I have.
53, yes. You referred to Dr. Peterson as Dr. Hugh R. Peterson.
Now, that is right.
And he was what in the seminary?
He became academic dean at the time, I believe, of the organization. But I can't recall just exactly when the library was placed under his supervision.
Could probably go on with that some more, at this time. What about the merging of professionalism in the library? Has there been such a thing?
You mean the requirement that the librarian be professional and receive training and such as that in order to be prepared for his work?
I assume that's what I mean,
because yeah.
I hear.
Yeah.
Comments in different areas,
yes.
Of professionalism in different
yes.
Places now, so that's
yes. I came to the library in 1937 without any training whatsoever in library work. I remember when I came, Dr. Davis telling me that no two libraries are alike, no two are operated alike. We brought you in here to learn this library and to operate this library. So he had no thought at the time of my taking any time out to study library science or to get a degree in library science. But a little later then, They began to think of it differently, and I became interested in it also, so that in 1945, while the war was still going on, I went to New York City and studied during a summer session in the School of Library Service at Columbia University, and then came on back and had the thought or hope of going back and finishing it to get a degree in library science. As I indicated, Dr. Fuller was president at that time, and he had indicated that I go during that summer of 1945. But then by the time 1946 came around, he had changed his view for some reason or other, and he indicated there's a lot of work here in the library, that needed to be done, and he didn't see any use in my going back to Columbia University to complete that work in library science.
I know present librarians, I think, all have degrees in library science in addition to their other work. You think you had anything to do with that?
Well, yes, I do, because I did eventually go back and complete that work. Dr. Dobbins was progressive in those things, but he was here such short period, though I advised with him from time to time. He was here as president such a short period. I advised with him in the matter, and he suggested my following through on the opportunity that I had. In 1955, after McCall had come in as president, and more and more librarians were receiving degrees, and there was more and more emphasis on qualifications for librarians. So he indicated then that I should make an effort to go back and complete the degrees. So in January of 1955, my wife and I went to New York City, and I attended the School of Library Service from January to May in a spring semester. Then she came on back here, and I was back for a while. And then in the summer of 1955, I went back again and worked, and then the summer of 1956. So I finished the required studies for a degree in library science and got my degree in October of 1956.
Do you think that helped in upgrading your relationship with the seminary and your status at the seminary as far as faculty is concerned?
I don't know whether it did or not. As I indicated, Dr. McCall had made me a faculty member in 1956, and I'm not sure. Maybe that had been a part of the agreement to complete that work or related to it. So I don't recall and don't have any notes on that.
Somewhere I understood or have seen that the Southern Baptist Historical Commission was part of our house or something in the seminary library. You know anything about that?
Yes, that is true. The historical interest of Southern Baptist were revived in the late 1930s, I believe 1939, and Southern Baptist Historical Society was organized. Dr. W. Carver advanced at that time in his years and leveling off somewhat in his teaching, and became extremely interested in the history of Southern Baptist. So he was, as I say, a member of the Southern Baptist Historic Society and on the Historic Committee of the Southern Baptist Convention, and looking toward the publication of a history of the Southern Baptist Convention, which was eventually written by Dr. W.W. Barnes. Dr. Carver had treated me very kindly from the time I came back to the library in 1937. He had been kind to me as a student, though I'm sure that I wasn't the kind of a student who always made good grades in his courses, because his thinking was far beyond my ability to think, and in certain areas in which I was not trained either. But I became interested then also in the long-run association work and Kentucky Baptist Convention work and Southern Baptist Convention history. So Dr. Carver then led in making me the custodian for the collection, which was being built up of materials by the historical interests of the Southern Baptist Convention. So that was housed in the basement of the west end of the library, Norton Hall.
Is it still housed in the seminar library?
No. Part of it is. There was, well, from back in the time of W.H. Whitsitt and W.J. McLaughlin, there had been historical interest at the library, especially in the Kentucky Baptist materials. So materials were designated property of Kentucky Baptist Historical Society back in that day. That had been housed separately, and some of it had been cataloged along with the main library collection. So that then, along with what had been built up for the Southern Baptist Historical Society, that was moved away from this library in, and I'm having difficulty recalling the dates here, 1953, I believe, is after Dr. Norman W. Cox came as the secretary of the Historical Commission of Southern Baptist Convention, and the collection then was moved to Nashville, and was joined with the Dargan Library of the Sunday School Board, and then they named this collection that went from here down there the Carver Collection, so it was called the Dargan Carver Library of the Sun School Board and of the Southern Baptist Historical Commission, it was called at that time.
Dr. W. Carver was responsible for some of this, I mean.
That's right. He was a leader. I guess the most active leader in it, Dr. Barnes, was becoming aged at that time and was not working too energetically, even on his history, so he was not as energetic leader as Dr. Carver was at that time.
Back to the relationship, more specifically in your relationship with Southern Seminary Library. Before you retired in 1971, did you have any successor or an assistant helping you, associate librarian or librarians?
Dr. Ronald Deering came onto the library staff in 1953, I believe. Well, do you have that date or not?
I do not have
not.
That date.
1963, and as a staff member in the area of research, and he one of the requirements when he came in was to complete the work for a degree of library science, and he chose Columbia University. So he spent two periods of study. The last one, I believe, in 1964 or maybe 65, I'm not sure. And when he came back, then he was made associate librarian and worked in the library until I retired in 1971. When he became the librarian.
And his last name is spelled
D-W-E-R-I-N-G.
There are some others in the library now. Did any of them start when you were still with them?
Yes. Nancy Robinson, of course, has been here since the, I should have looked these up, but I believe since about 1953 or 54, she worked over in the old library for several years, and then was with us when we moved over here. And it has been been catalog librarian or head of the catalog department now for several years. Miss Elsie Miller has a training, and she came in after I left. Dr. Paul Debusman came in. He was in the library. No, I believe he was not a member of the staff fully. He was working as a student. He helped me in getting the materials together for moving them over here in 1959. I remember he spent weeks and weeks at boxing up and packing the periodicals on the third floor of the stack room in the other library. And then he came on in the library as a staff member somewhere about, I believe, about 61 or 62. I can't recall that date exactly.
You know, what was his title?
He was, well, I haven't reviewed these things. Research librarian, I believe, for a while, or periodicals librarian. I just can't recall.
And you referred earlier in the interview to Dr. Andy Rawls. He's with the seminary and a library with audiovisual aid.
Now that is right.
That started before you retired.
yes. When this library was planned in 56 and 57, 58, audiovisuals was in the picture. And we planned this audiovisuals area here, which is as it stands at the present time. I understand it's going to be enlarged considerably, or that is, the work is going to be enlarged considerably. So yes, we were making definite plans for that. I have a reference here in regard to the first microfilm that was bought by the seminary library. It was a microfilm of the minutes of the Muscle Shoals Baptist Church down in South Kentucky from 1787 until 1874. We bought that in 1940, long before we had any reader or in any provision for reading it at all on the old perforated film.
So audiovisual aids has been a part of the library
since that time. Yes,
that time.
Yes, that's right.
So when you started in the library, you were the assistant, then the associate, and then the acting, and then librarian.
That's right.
And whom did you have helping you in the early days?
Yes.
The students, the student wives, or
During that period, they were all students and students' wives. The secretary, of course, I did the cataloging until Nancy Robinson came, but the typing was done by a student wife, and the students took care of the desk, circulation, kept the library open at night, did the janitor work and things of that nature. I myself had worked in the library as a student during my last year, during session 1934 and 35. I'm trying to avoid saying what my job was. My job was really janitor. But I learned a lot about the library.
Well, starting off as janitor of the library during some of your student days, you wound up later being called to come back as assistant librarian and then eventually librarian.
That's right.
Do you have somewhat in conclusion, in a sense we'd like to continue on with this, but do you have any significant observations, you observed any significant changes in the relationship of the library to the other facets of the seminary life in your time as librarian?
Well, yes, there have been some rather hard-fought battles. That was to try to get a recognition of the place of the library in the seminary setup. For instance, I was told that the library did not rank with the three schools of the seminary. That I had no hope ever of being stepped up to a place where I would ever rank with the deans of the seminary. That's not won yet, I'm sure, but I hope time will come when the place of the library and the librarian will be recognized. And along with that, of course, goes the position, goes also the matter of salary. If you got a low position, you got a low salary schedule. For instance, during the last few years of my tenure here, there were four men in the organization, not deans, but in the organizations, who were here far shorter period than I was, and whose work I didn't consider any more important in mind to the life of the seminary, and who had never had any prescribed direction. Now you go take this particular course to prepare you for your work. But I was aware during the last few years that those men were receiving, well, $1,000, $1,500 a year more than I was in salary. So it's a practical thing, not only just a matter of position, rank, and so forth. Though those are one of the most disheartening things that I had to contend with.
Do you mind, do you have any recollection, and if you do, do you mind expressing what your salary was when you began?
Oh, yes. I looked at the letter this afternoon from Dr. Sampe. Dr. Sampe, in that letter, June the 6th, 1937, when I was at Glasgow, Missouri, said he would offer me $75 a month and a place to live. And he said that amounts to about $100 a month. Well, that was big money compared to what I was getting where I was at that time. So I lived in one of the brown houses on the side of the hill that slopes off toward Grinstead Drive from the north side of Mullins Hall. We lived in that brown house for 22 years. Then the salary began to step up a little, and after I moved away from there in 1959, of course, there was there was a time when, say, $100 a month was, or was it $50 a month, it was figured in as housing, and then a salary based otherwise. But then when I moved out in 1959, to my present home in 404 Pleasant View, the salary was stepped up then some more.
You think you kept up with inflation?
I guess so, but the value of the house, you see, I paid $16,500 for the house in 1959, and here almost 20 years later, the tax people evaluate the house around $30,000, you see. But that of course, that means I have to pay more taxes on it.
Somewhat in conclusion, do you think of any important events or stories or something in your tenure as librarian?
Well, the fact that I did get elected to the faculty and had the opportunity to signed the book with James P. Boyce and John A. Broadus and others, and the fact that I did get to deliver a faculty address in the March of 1960, that was a very great accomplishment from my point of view, coming from central Missouri and working here to rise to points such as that.
You don't consider a librarian's work as being working with dry, dusty things, then?
No, I do not. It has not proved that way with me. One thing I wanted to emphasize was my added interest. Dr. Carver was a very great influence to me. Dr. Carver, although he was very busy, would take time to go to the Louisville Baptist Pastors Conference every Monday morning because nobody else from seminary represented the seminary. So I got interested and was going, and so at the time of Dr. Carver's death in 1954, before that time, I said to myself, well, now I'm going to do what I can to represent the seminary before, along with the Louisville Baptist Pastors did this conference. So I kept that up as long as the conference continued. It's dead at the present time. One time, I was president of the Louisville Baptist Pastors Conference, and it was a very strategic time. That was in 1957 when the controversy arose in regard to Dr. McCall's relationship to faculty member. And I remember at that time that a student at the seminary and one of the pastors tried to get a motion passed whereby the Louisville Baptist Pastors Conference would condemn Dr. McCall and his role in the seminary. And I there had the opportunity to maneuver a little bit. I was the old secretary of groups, you know, and I never got to serve very often as a presiding officer, but we did steer it to the point where they were not able to pass a resolution that would have been embarrassing to Dr. McCall. I think that was some contribution to the seminary and to him as personal, in personal relationship.
You referred to 1957 and a controversy, and I have no desire at this point to get into all of that. Could you, in just a sentence or so, express the gist of the controversy?
13 members of the School of Theology banded together and went to the trustees or stated to the trustees that they were all going to resign unless Duke McCall should be removed from his position as president of the seminary. I may be stating it a little too strong, but that's about the substance of it. They all followed through on it, 12 of them. One of them did not follow through and is on the faculty at the present time.
But the controversy did not kill the seminary.
No, it did not. 12 members of the faculty. There were few faculty members there for a year or two, but the faculty was built up again rather quickly, and the faculty was strong again within a few years.
I certainly appreciate this opportunity to talk with you, interview with you tonight, and I hope that it's been pleasant for you, it's been pleasant for me.
Well,
there are some other things we could explore at maybe sometime.
Thank you, Tom. I believe that I have steered to the point where I have not said anything that would be embarrassing to anybody who is on the faculty at the present time or around at the present time, or that would cause any controversy. As I have indicated, my unhappiness with a lot of things that developed, but I have not named any names, but But of course, I could do that personally with anyone who wouldn't know exactly what my relationships are and how I feel.
I don't think that'd be necessary at this time. Thank you very much.